Good morning. Welcome to a Tuesday. Yes, the three-day weekend has finally come to an end. I was hoping it would last 4 or 5 days, but that didn't happen. This is Bill Meyer, and you've got the Faith Radio Network, so great to have you with us. Coming up in less than 5 minutes, Rebecca, Paul, and I will update you on some of the big stories from over the holiday weekend, and maybe a few you might have missed. Later on this hour, Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News will tell us how the Russian government is cracking down on Christian evangelism efforts in their country, and some missionaries have had to leave. Ruth's been tracking that story, and she'll fill us in on that. Now, if you didn't hear, Phyllis Schlafly passed away over the weekend at the age of 92. She rose to fame back in the 1970s when she campaigned against the Equal Rights Amendment. She had been actually an activist since the early Cold War era, but she really jumped onto the national stage when she got a lot of traditional women, especially Christian women, upset and activated to fight the Equal Rights Amendment. President Reagan praised her campaign against that amendment as brilliant and called Schlafly an example to those who would struggle for an America that is prosperous and free. Phyllis rose to national attention back in the early 60s with her self-published book, A Choice, Not an Echo, which became kind of a manifesto for a lot of conservatives. That book sold 3 million copies, and it really traced the history of the Republican National Convention. And it's credited with helping conservative Senator Barry Goldwater of Arizona earn the GOP nomination in 64, which, of course, he went on to lose the presidential election. Now, she went on to become one of the most influential pro-family activists in the 80s and 90s. Her support was courted by all GOP presidential candidates, and she went on to author 27 books and thousands of articles. Her organization, the Eagle Forum, was founded in 1972. It focuses on pro-family and socially conservative issues, now has an estimated 80,000 members. Donald Trump praised Phyllis Schlafly in a statement released yesterday. He said, "Phyllis Schlafly is a conservative icon who led millions to action, reshaped the conservative movement, and fearlessly battled globalism and the kingmakers on behalf of America's workers and families. I was honored to spend time with her during our campaign as she waged one more great battle for national sovereignty." Republican National Committee Chairman Reince Priebus said in a statement that Schlafly was an unflinching champion of many ideas Republicans have long held dear. And I was just checking out her bio. She earned a master's degree in government from Harvard back in 1945. Then she went to Washington University School of Law. And at the age of 51, she graduated 27th in her class. Schlafly received an honorary degree at Washington University's commencement in 2008, though some students and faculty protested by getting up from their seats and turning their backs on the stage. Schlafly called it a happy day. "I'm just sorry for those who tried to rain on a happy day." Always an optimist. She's survived by 6 children, 16 grandchildren, and 3 great-grandchildren. The world will miss Phyllis Schlafly. Welcome back. 9 minutes past the hour here at the Faith Radio Network. Bill Meyer joined by Rebecca Maxwell and Paul Perrault from our morning show team. Good morning,
Paul. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill. How are you?
I'm well.
I'm glad you're here.
I had to wake. No, I'm barely awake. I have this, which will help me in my first cup of coffee. And once I drink it, I'll be there. Now, we thought we'd spend a few minutes updating you on some of the big stories from over the weekend and some you may have missed, but we think you'll find interesting. I just mentioned the death of Phyllis Schlafly. What a fighter, huh, Paul?
She was. You know, actually, there was a part, one of the headlines I saw in the media was talking about her being the anti-feminist. And I don't like some words that are used because, you know, that means, was she anti-female? I think, no, she just had a different worldview about what femininity was and in the broader context of humanity. And that's what people were fighting against, I guess. They didn't like that idea. So. So.
Well, and I have a Christian conservative woman. Yes, I am all three, and you can well be all those three things and be happy with your life. Who knew? I really looked up to Phyllis Schlafly. I mean, growing up, reading her books, knowing the conservative movement was framed by her arguments. So anyone that is conservative politically or values Christian values and Christian principles in American politics has a debt of gratitude to Phyllis Schlafly. The reason that I think the feminists, as you said, Paul, may try to turn around her eulogy into something negative is because of the quote unquote Equal Rights Amendment, which was portrayed as this huge victory for women. And she stood against that because it was basically about abortion. It was about saying that women should have the right to terminate their child's life. And that's why she stood against it. And as a woman that values the value of all life, I greatly esteem her contributions. And I got the opportunity to meet Phyllis on a couple of different occasions and talk with her briefly. That's a memory that will stand with me because she was a lady of distinction and dignity. Mm. And she just had this self-possession where she knew exactly who she was and what she was about at all times. She had direction, she had focus, and I think it's that type of purpose that so many of us are longing for today. So I think that example is one that the world will miss.
How beautiful, though, that you had a chance to meet her.
Mm-hmm. It was really fun.
You know, this one of the things I loved about her was her optimism, as I mentioned. I mean, this is a lady who is a strong fighter. She didn't, you know, give up on her principles, but she always had a smile on her face and she did it in a positive way. And a lot like Ronald Reagan. And if you think about the two of them and kind of their relationship during his presidency, he was also an optimist. So we will all miss Phyllis Schlafly. Paul, fill us in on the latest on the Clinton email kerfluffle.
Kerfluffle. Oh,
word of the day.
The word of the day. Yes.
There you go.
Well, it was one of those Friday document dumps that happened by the FBI. What is it about the government? Anytime there's information, vast amounts, they do it on a Friday when everybody's ready to check out. They did it in front of a holiday weekend, even more so.
But asked and answered, Your Honor. Everybody's checking out. No one's going to comb through with a highlighter.
Yeah, there you go. But that said, okay, yeah, a lot of new insights, but nothing new. Big revelation as to what we didn't already know is really what came down to it. One of the things that really just kind of jumped out was, now she said she had training, she signed off she had training about dealing with classified documents and highly sensitive documents, even though she doesn't recall that she had that training. She did sign off on it, but then she shared documents that had a little C mark. And, oh, I thought that was a paragraph notation.
Oh, no, she didn't say that.
Yes, she did. The C marking meant before a paragraph and an email marked, it means confidential. But that's what that meant. It's like, oh, boy.
Yikes.
Again, and there was a few other issues that came up about, okay, she had multiple cell phones and tablets during her time at the State Department. And those devices were purposely destroyed with hammers, at least some of them that were being decommissioned.
They
were
my goodness.
Purposely decommissioned. Mm.
There's a visual.
With a ball peen. So there you go.
So we'll never know what was on those.
We'll never know.
Yeah, and I'm sure more will be coming out in the months to come. So
I'm
we'll
sure
watch.
There's more that's supposed to be coming out before October. So how that affects the campaign, hard to say. It's just kind of that constant drip, 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 drip.
Right. I wouldn't want to be involved in a campaign that had to defend myself against. Like, when the best scenario you can hope for is that people believe you're just incompetent, that's not a good place to be for a presidential campaign. I'm just saying.
Now, Rebecca, Mr. Trump, on the other side of the political aisle,
yes,
has been changing his view, his perspective on immigration.
Well, not to hear his campaign say it. They'll say that he holds the line no matter what he says, basically. But this has been one of his signature issues. So when it looked like he was doing a flip-flop or a bit of a turn or a 180, however you want to phrase it, in his recent speeches, then they felt now suddenly reporters and everyone in the media has been questioning Trump on where he really stands. Let's get down to brass tacks. So, of course, he delivers big speech in Phoenix, says he's going to do another hard line sort of stand. And over the weekend, he was asked, asked about whether or not he would rule out a pathway to legal status for illegal residents here. And Trump said, I'm not ruling out anything. We're going to make that decision in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And while that is, I mean, that's a bit of vague language there.
Vagary. I got another good word for the day. Ding, ding, ding.
You guys and your words for the day.
We're your verbal vitamin on the Dr. Bill Show.
Thank you.
That is a bit of a step back from what he had been saying, which is we're going to deport all illegal residents, no exceptions, make them come back in and do the citizenship route that way. Now he's saying we're not going to rule anything out. So that may present just another bit of doubt. Again, it's kind of like it's not a huge sea change, I think, for his campaign, but it's, again, that questioning, that doubt in people's minds. Is he really serious about this issue, or can I believe this versus that?
You know, one thing that was funny over the weekend, somebody on one of my Facebook friends shared a video of Chris Matthews talking about, okay, say what you want about Trump. And this is interesting coming from a guy who's hard left, but say what you want about Trump and his immigration policies, but he's catching on something that a lot of average people know and that really understand deep down, that our government has a responsibility to make sure we have safe borders, that a country, any country, has the right to have secure borders. And
it's hard to have a country without them.
Yeah, try to have a country without them. Most people understand that deep down. They see that. And so why would, even though some of the stuff that Trump says drives me nuts personally, I can understand where he's coming from, and a lot of people do on this whole issue. Why don't we have secure borders when things are so fluid? I mean, there's health issues, there's economic issues, a whole bunch of issues that are being compromised by fluid borders. And he understands deep down that basic principle of a secured border.
Well, as someone who lived in Texas for 4 years and saw so many illegal immigrants coming across the border, including many children, unaccompanied minors, really a very, very difficult situation. And we will see how it all shakes out in Mr. Trump's campaign in the future. So thank you, Paul, Rebecca, for your insights this morning. As always, we appreciate both of you. 17 past the hour, and this is the Faith Radio Network.
Good morning, Faith Radio family. You're listening to the Dr. Bill Meyer Live Show. I'm Rebecca, the producer. Happy to be here. Good morning. And we get to do a special segment, which I'm excited about. And it's Ask Dr. Bill. Yes, Dr. Bill is live in the studio. And we have lots of questions from listeners about things like relationships and marriage and parenting. You know, all the kinds of good messy stuff that when you have to deal with people,
it gets kind of messy.
Yeah. So you have a lot of questions. And I'm so excited to be able to get your expert advice, Dr. Bill. Now, these questions didn't come from me. They actually came from listeners.
Thank the Lord for that.
If you get a question from Rebecca in the Twin Cities, you'll know who it is.
Okay.
But we did get an email from Shauna, and she listens to Faith Radio in Fargo on Faith 1200. And Shauna writes, Dear Dr. Bill, my children are having trouble listening to instructions and following directions. I believe my daughter is simply being defiant sometimes, and my son gets very focused on the TV, a book, or a game on his mobile device. Yeah. It seems like I have to repeat myself over and over again. How can I help my kids build good listening skills?
Oh, great question, Shauna. And welcome to the club for those of us that have kids that have mobile devices. Mm-hmm. Oh, my Lord. Okay, the best way to teach your children to listen is to change the way you communicate with them. Okay, it's really common, and I will speak for myself here as well. It's very common for us as parents to develop some ineffective communication patterns with our kids. And these patterns actually teach our kids not to pay attention, to disregard our instructions, and sometimes even to engage in defiant behavior. So first of all, you need to make sure your kids have your full attention when you're speaking to them. Never, ever ask your child to do something or give them instructions when they are watching TV or playing a computer game or engaged in some other type of activity. So turn off the TV. Ask your child to give you his mobile device. Honey, I need that iPod. Look him in the eyes, tell him to look you in the eyes, and then give him a clear, unambiguous instruction. Now, you also want to make sure that your instructions are backed up by a time deadline and a consequence. So, for example, instead of simply saying, which a lot of parents say, Johnny, turn off that TV and clean up your room. What you say, first you turn off the TV, get your son's full attention, and say something like this. Johnny, it's 5 o'clock. I want you to put away all your toys and put your dirty clothes in the hamper by 5:30. I'm going to set the kitchen timer for 30 minutes. And when it rings, I'm going to come and inspect your work. And if you do a good job, I'll let you have 30 more minutes of game time after dinner tonight. But if you haven't done your work by 5:30, you won't be able to play on your iPod at all tonight. So you can see you're giving him a time limit. You're giving him a specific consequence and very specific instructions on what to do. Then, of course, you need to follow through and implement that consequence.
Sure, yeah.
If you don't, what have you just taught your son?
It doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't mean anything.
And I don't have to listen to you.
That's right. Exactly. You don't mean what you say. And, you know, parents often have to repeatedly plead and beg and threaten their kids with statements like, if I have to tell you one more time, young man, you're in big trouble. It just doesn't work.
Yes, my dad sounded exactly like that. You know,
does
what
sound
saying.
Like Jimmy Stewart. Rebecca, if I have to tell you one more time. Okay, now those statements actually become meaningless to your child because they're never backed up by action. And you get more and more frustrated at the child's lack of follow through. And often you reach the point where you blow up in anger. And in some families, that can even unfortunately result in physical or emotional abuse. So the clear, unambiguous command or instruction followed up by, you know, a consequence and certainly a time deadline. Dr. Russell Barkley, one of the nation's leading experts on parent training, has this phrase, which I love, and every parent should remember this. Act, don't yak. Act, don't yak. In other words, if you're trying to use words or reasons or threats to get your child to behave, you are actually setting yourself up for failure and frustration. So, Sean, I hope that's helpful. Thank you for listening to Faith Radio in Fargo.
All right. Here's another email from a mom named Becky. So not me, but Becky listens in the Twin Cities on Faith 90.7 FM. Thanks for listening, Becky. She writes, Dear Dr. Bill, in the past, I've heard you talk about how to help kids manage their anger. Well, I have an angry husband who had an angry father who also had an angry father. So I'm seeing these tendencies in our own young sons, and I would like to have any kind of advice you could give me.
Wow. Oh, man, Becky. And first of all, that is a difficult situation, and I'm sorry you were experiencing that right now. The best way to help your sons with their anger problem is for your husband to get help with his anger problem. It seems really clear from your email. Your husband is modeling inappropriate anger in your family, and your little guys are now imitating him. Kids learn how to deal with life and relationships from their parents. Now, your husband is angry, as you said, because he had an angry father, and now he is passing that pattern on to your sons. The Bible calls this generational sin. Your husband was sinned against by his angry father through no fault of his own. That, in turn, has caused him to sin against you and your sons by taking out his anger on you. And your family needs to break that pattern. And frankly, the responsibility rests on your husband and somewhat on you. I would encourage you to approach him in love when he's not angry. Tell him you're concerned about what you're starting to see in your sons, their anger. Ask him to consider if it could be possible they're learning that behavior from him. Now, hopefully, your husband has the ability to step back, look at his own actions, take responsibility for his behavior, and make some changes. And if that's the case, the best answer for him is to find a good therapist who has experience in dealing with anger management. And frankly, probably at some point, the entire family should get involved in the counseling process. You all want to learn more effective ways to communicate and resolve your conflict. Now, that's the best case scenario, Rebecca. If in this case, the husband is unwilling to acknowledge he has a problem and he simply responds with more anger or blaming, then Becky should seek help and support from close friends or relatives or maybe even or her pastor. And Becky, let me suggest you read Dr. James Dobson's book, Love Must Be Tough. And that book will teach you the steps you might need to take to help your husband as well as helping yourself and your kids. And one more thing I need to mention. If you ever feel that you or your kids are in physical danger, find a safe place to go. Don't be afraid to call the proper authorities. So thank you so much for writing, Becky, and I will be praying for your situation.
Absolutely.